Good morning. This is Glenn Andrews of Heroes and Kings, Elijah Brady of Heroes and Kings. Good Sunday morning, as usual, about to get ready to go get some cardio in, basically hit the treadmill, my Roar air bike, about to get it in. About 1 week away from going to visit my son for about 12 days. He's on the left coast in school. When I get back, return back to the right coast, we'll be sending my daughter off to college, and me and the wife will be empty nesters outside of our third child, which is Bernie Mac the Rottweiler. Interesting week. As always, interesting weekend. I usually do this on Monday, but I thought I'd do it today, Sunday morning. I got a little bit of time on my hands right now. And I like to do my podcast with a clear mind and clear thought, and taking all the weekly experiences, discussions, conversations, and everything I've done over the week, and kind of just do an overview. And do an overview of the week past, so I can get ready for the week that's about to take place. Because it's one of those things of kind of having a plan for what you want to do for the week, what you want to achieve, any objectives, any goals, any initiatives, what you want to do as far as training that week. If you're working towards a 90-day goal, or a 6-month goal, or you're in the middle of a year goal of taking on either a mental or physical health and wellness transformation. So you always got to look at where you have come from, look at where you are, and look at where you want to go. And it's constant. You know, you got to keep moving. I saw somebody said something or did something. Oh, Kaisha Fit, KAISIAFIT. Someone just posed the question, you know, do you work out every day? Or do you do something every day, or something along those lines? And she said, yes, I try to move every day. And I thought that was the greatest answer. It was just the perfect answer, because that's literally what the human body and the human mind needs. The human body needs to move every day. It needs to move past being average. It needs to move past the normal every day. And you need to challenge your body as well as you need to challenge your mind. You need to read. You need to do computations. You need to look at numbers. You need to look at words. And sometimes it may even be great to look at a different language and discern what that language is. You know, I have with these phones, there's so much technology and so much on a phone that you can do, that it's really sad that we don't have a higher IQ or a more intelligent population. However, having said that, there are language apps, language translators, and all kind of software, hardware, technology to make the human being better. And I say make the human being better because I think we're getting lazy. Matter of fact, I know we're getting lazy. And you have to balance out technology, machines, robotics with what a human being can do. From a business standpoint, I recognize robotics is efficient and you have more production. However, it takes human beings to create those robots and robotics to run a factory or run a manufacturing process. On the flip side, when it comes to having technology and things that make what we so-called, quote-unquote, make life easier, I dare say in some situations it makes the human being lazier. Perfect example is a remote control for a TV. Though the remote control makes it easier for you to just plop down in your lazy boy, grab the remote control and hit the TV, and then every time you need to change a channel, you just lift up your hand and push a button. And now you can do that on your phone as well. You can program your phone to control a TV. What is it to rise out your chair if you're watching that much TV and watching that many channels to get up and turn the TV off or turn the channel. We don't even do that anymore, you know? And that's one of those areas where do you make the balance? You know, something as simple as getting up and turning off a TV has turned into you sit in your chair and you just flip through channels, and it's also has turned into a kind of an analogy of the certain kind of father, a certain kind of man who just comes home after work. In most cases, or in some cases, don't even have a job and just plops on a chair and just press buttons all day. And it's an analogy. And one of the analogies I never, as they say, that I never wanted to be, that my kids would see me work all day, or I've had some home-based businesses, and when they saw me plop on my chair or sit at a chair, that I'd be flipping through channels. At all times, they would see me in movement. At all times, they would see me at a computer or a laptop, me creating. At all times, they would see me. They saw me working on a hot rod. They saw me take an engine out of a car and put another engine in a car. They saw me up under a car welding. They saw me in the backyard building a backyard park. My kids got a chance to see me walk across a stage when I got my MBA. And so they've always seen my body in movement. They've always seen my mind in movement. And that's powerful. And it's sad that enough of us and enough children have not seen men with their body and their minds in movement. I'm gonna say that again. It's sad that enough young children, girls and boys, have not seen grown men with their minds and their bodies in movement. And I'll say in a positive movement. And what that means is just seeing a man being the best he can be. Mentally, holistically, physically, spiritually, just seeing him being the best it can be and getting a chance for children to see something different than what has been put out in the diaspora. I say that because yesterday I had one of my longest friendship. As a matter of fact, I consider him my brother, Marcus. He was here visiting. Actually, he had a family reunion in Savannah. And I've known this brother since I was 7 years old. And a weird dynamics, his father is my uncle's father, stepfather. And so Mark's brother, Mark's stepbrother, married my aunt. And so we've been attached to the hip since we were 7 years old, riding bicycles, playing little league baseball. Then he went to another high school playing football. I went to another high school playing football. And then when we got out of high school, I had got hurt because I was on my way to USC, and I got hurt. And so I had to figure out what I was going to do. I was in junior college, and Mess Ronnie got me a job working for the government right out of high school. And Mark was in satellite. He was studying satellites and electronics and stuff, and he got him a job doing that. Then he got him a job in the government, and we were in our 20s, and early 20s, as a matter of fact. We were late teens, early 20s, and we were both going to junior college, and he met a young lady named Sharon, and she was from Atlanta, and he ended up asking her to get married. I was the best man. The wedding, oddly enough, was in Atlanta. So, had always watched black college football today on ESPN back in the day and knew about the HBCUs, but didn't know that much about them. But so we came here for the wedding. I was the best man. And during the time we was here, we just took a tour of Atlanta, and we happened to go by the AU Center. And I just picked up a college application just on a whim. And had the wedding, Mark's married. We all come back to San Diego, and I'm working, going to junior college, got my AA. Now it's time for me to transfer to an undergrad school. And I had Columbia, Dillard, Morgan State, San Diego State, UCSD, some of the schools in San Diego, and literally got accepted to all of them, and had to decide what I was going to do. And I had literally accepted Morgan State because it was the farthest away. It was in Baltimore, and it was the farthest away. And then Dillard came in Louisiana. So I'm going to head there. I already accepted San Diego State, already accepted to the schools in California. It would have been a lot cheaper. I would have been able to stay at home. Had paid to accept Morgan State, was getting ready to buy the plane ticket. I took about a year furlough from my government job. Had a great boss, Tony Bonilla. He told me that, hey, Glenn, we can furlough your position. You can go down there, go to school. If it don't work out, I got a job back for you if it don't work out. And so for him, I respect him for that to this day. Then one of the other odd ways life works, Sharon, Mark, my best friend, Sharon being from Atlanta, her dad was a Morehouse man. As a matter of fact, Dr. Chandler was an English professor. His wife, Mrs. Floyd Chandler, was also a Spelman grad. So it's weird how the karma works out. So I was on my way to Morgan State and getting ready to buy plane tickets, getting everything set up, getting ready to shut everything down in San Diego, make this move for school. And at the last minute, my Morehouse College application was accepted. They accepted me, and that changed everything, because I said, you know what, I'm headed down here to Atlanta, because I saw what the cost of living was at the time. I knew what the cost of living was in San Diego, what it was in California, what it was in Atlanta, what it was in Georgia. And I knew the apartment and condo that me and Mark had in California, I can come here, go to school, get a job, and have me a house and land. I knew this 20 years ago. And so I end up coming to Morehouse. Ironically, when I arrive to get set up for my dorm, and I stayed in Benjamin Mays Hall, which that's another thing of that's karmic and an irony. I stayed in Benjamin Mays Hall, and the dorm wasn't ready yet. So, you know, I had money, had credit cards, because I was a little older than most of the incoming freshmen, because I came in as a sophomore junior. And so I knew how to take care of myself and plan A, plan B. I had to rent a car. I had some money. I had credit cards. So I knew I could go stay at a hotel for a week or 2 weeks until the dorms were ready. Well, actually about a couple of days until the dorms were ready. And I said, okay, dorms are not ready. You know, let me go to plan B. Called Marcus and told him what was going on. And he said, hey, just you know, Mr. Chandler said, when you get there, let him know, and just let him know what's going on. And so I called Mr. Chandler, and I told him what was going on at Morehouse. And it almost brings tears to my eyes, because Sharon's parents, Mr. Gene and Floyd Chandler, allowed me to stay at their house, fixed me meals. They allowed me to stay there until my dorm was ready. And then I went on to school. Mr. and Mrs. Chandler had only met me at Sharon's wedding, because I was Mark's best man. That's all they knew of me. And I saw the and they knew Mark, and they know what kind of man was marrying their daughter. And me, Darren, and Chuck were the groomsmen, and I was Mark's best man. So they knew us from that. But that's all they knew. But Mr. Chandler, Dr. Chandler, allowed me to stay in his house, and Mrs. Chandler fed me breakfast. And rest in peace, Mrs. Chandler, to the end of time. I have so many people to be thankful for, but I'm definitely going to be thankful to the Chandler, Sharon's family, for what they did, because they didn't have to do that. And that just shows you, one, how that was that Southern hospitality. Two, that was that Morehouse Spelman connection. And three, how your pattern, your character, and your movement of your mind, your movement of your body, and the way you move about this world is karmic, and how it can have an effect on you, how it can have an effect on others, and what it means over time. And so that's why I'm tying this all together, because the way you move physically, the way you move mentally, the way you move in your interactions with people tells other people about who you are and what you are. And you can't be lazy about that. You just cannot be lazy. And here it is, 20, almost 20 something years, from me coming here for Mark's wedding, end up going to Morehouse, end up meeting the Chandlers, which is Sharon's parents, Mark's in-laws. I end up coming here to go to school, end up meeting Hotep, meeting some of the guys I met at Morehouse, becoming a Morehouse man. Brother that helped me out so much, Hotep Akhenaten, Hustle University. Meeting him, meeting my wife, getting into the mortgage and banking industry, meeting Henry Constanza, who was one of the foremost Datsun guys here in Georgia. He had one of the first Datsuns 280Zs with a V8 swap. Meeting him, and I just literally came to this city, this state, and found a new world and found a new life of movement, mentally, physically, spiritually. And yesterday, me and Mark was here for his other side of family reunion, and we had a chance to sit there and have breakfast and just chop it up, and we just kind of reminisced and talked about these last 20 years of what our life has been. Both of us married over 20 years, both of us with two children, both of us with kids going to school or going to college or doing something. And then we have our buddy Vince, the same thing. Married over 20 years, two kids, two sons, one in college, one in high school, getting ready to go to college. And we're talking three young African-American men from Southeast San Diego, one of the roughest areas of San Diego. I had my mom and dad. Mark had his parents. Vince didn't have his dad, but he had enough uncles and men around, plus my dad and other coaches, so that filled in. But he knew his dad. His dad lived in Fresno. We visited him one day. His dad at that time was just an ox. He was still at that time, I want to say, in his 40s, and was on a tree cutting business, and he was still climbing trees, cutting them down. And we see where Vince get it from. And to have three African-American men from one of the hardest areas of the city, San Diego, rise from it is remarkable and magical. And what I tell folks is, yes, we're special, but we're special because of the circumstances. You know, circumstances spit out either negativity, evil, or special individuals. And we're not the only ones. We're not the only ones. There's several. I can speak on all the Heisman Trophy winners that have come from San Diego, from Ricky Williams to Reggie Bush to Rashawn Salaam, Marcus Allen. There's a couple of other guys that played football there. Robert Griffith, Eric Allen, James Primus. He's down here in Atlanta. He played for the Falcons. There were some basketball players, the baseball players, Kevin Mitchell, Sam Horn, you know. I mean, I can just go on and on and on. Gail Devers, she's from San Diego. So Nick Cannon, I know Nick Cannon's dad. You know, I know his father. So it's remarkable what has come out of San Diego, but it's also disappointing of what could have been with different circumstances. But because of my experiences and my travels, I realized there's a Southeast San Diego in every part of the country. And that window of opportunity we had and those voices we had, we no longer have those voices. We no longer have those windows of opportunity. And not me, but I'm seeing this younger generation. We have more technology. We have more of a lot, but I see less opportunity, and I see more. I see the view, that light, that optimism. I don't see the optimism, and I fear for the next two generations. But that fear motivates me not to sit and soak and wait for shit to happen. That fear and that hunger, that fire says make some things happen. And that's where the movement of my mind comes. That's where the movement of my body. You know, I'm going to post something later on Facebook to let folks know. It's like, Glenn, why do you work out so much? You getting ready to turn 55 years old. Why do you read so much? Why do you grind? Why do you do the things you do? Why? I said, well, you know what? My why is I'm not trying to be young. I'm trying to be great. For 400 years, too many folks have been told they're no good, they're animals, and treated as such. And I'm changing that narrative. Elijah's changing that narrative. There's a million others changing that narrative. I ain't trying to be young. I'm trying to be great. And if you don't understand that, that's your personal problem. That is your personal problem. But you can't stop greatness. And if you get in the way, you're just going to make me even more great. You're just going to make us even more great. So it becomes you either with us or against us. But if you're against us, you're going to even make us more great. So my thought for the day is always have your mind and your body, your personality, your communication, your aura, your karma, always have it in positive movement. Always have it in positive movement, because karma is a bitch. It really, really is. It really, really is. There's some situations that have no explanation, because I'll drop this little tidbit. I will always, always have hoodies. I will always wear hoodies, because when that young man was shot and killed, murdered, Trayvon Martin was murdered by that punk ass, I had to watch my son every day get on a bus and he would be wearing hoodies. And I had to tell him to stop wearing his hoodies because I didn't want something to happen to him. And just as Trayvon Martin was more than likely just a good kid, my son is a good kid. And it's sad that a sweatshirt that could have a brand on it that can make you $1 million has become symbolic with the injustice in this country. So I wear hoodies. I might even put in my will, make sure I'm buried in a hoodie, because I know what kind of man I am. I know what kind of man my friends are. I know what kind of man Elijah, Sydney, Donnie, these brothers are. And the hoodie is not symbolic of criminality. The hoodie is symbolic of being grown, handling your business, and we're going to flip the script. We're going to flip the script on that. So this is Glenn Andrews. Keep your mind, body, spirit in positive movement. We're not trying to be young. We had a good time when we were young. Right now, we're trying to be great. This is Glenn Andrews, Heroes and Kings. Elijah Brady, Heroes and Kings, signing out. Good morning. This is Glenn Andrews of Heroes and Kings. Elijah Brady of Heroes and Kings. Good Sunday morning. As usual, about to get ready to go get some cardio in, basically hit the treadmill, my Roar air bike, about to get it in. About 1 week away from going to visit my son for about 12 days. He's on the other, he's on the left coast in school. When I get back, return back to the right coast, we'll be sending my daughter off to college, and me and the wife will be empty nesters outside of our third child, which is Bernie Mac the Rottweiler. Interesting week, as always. Interesting weekend. I usually do this on Monday, but I thought I'd do it today, Sunday morning. I got a little bit of time on my hands right now, and I like to do my podcast with a clear mind and clear thought, and taking all the weekly experiences, discussions, conversations, and everything I've done over the week, and kind of just do an overview, and do an overview of the week past, so I can get ready for the week that's about to take place. Because it's one of those things of kind of having a plan for what you want to do for the week, what you want to achieve, any objectives, any goals, any initiatives, what you want to do as far as training that week. If you're working towards a 90-day goal, or a 6-month goal, or you're in the middle of a year goal of taking on either a mental or physical health and wellness transformation. So you always got to look at where you have come from, look at where you are, and look at where you want to go. And it's constant. You know, you got to keep moving. I saw somebody said something or did something. Oh, Kaisha Fit, KAISIAFIT. Someone just posed the question, you know, do you work out every day? Or do you do something every day, or something along those lines? And she said, yes, I try to move every day. And I thought that was the greatest answer. It was just the perfect answer, because that's literally what the human body and the human mind needs. The human body needs to move every day. It needs to move past being average. It needs to move past the normal every day. And you need to challenge your body as well as you need to challenge your mind. You need to read. You need to do computations. You need to look at numbers. You need to look at words. And sometimes it may even be great to look at a different language and discern what that language is. You know, I have with these phones, there's so much technology and so much on a phone that you can do, that it's really sad that we don't have a higher IQ or a more intelligent population. However, having said that, there are language apps, language translators, and all kind of software, hardware, technology to make the human being better. And I say make the human being better because I think we're getting lazy. Matter of fact, I know we're getting lazy. And you have to balance out technology, machines, robotics with what a human being can do. From a business standpoint, I recognize robotics is efficient and you have more production. However, it takes human beings to create those robots and robotics to run a factory or run a manufacturing process. On the flip side, when it comes to having technology and things that make what we so-called, quote-unquote, make life easier, I dare say in some situations, it makes the human being lazier. Perfect example is a remote control for a TV. Though the remote control makes it easier for you to just plop down in your lazy boy, grab the remote control and hit the TV, and then every time you need to change a channel, you just lift up your hand and push a button. And now you can do that on your phone as well. You can program your phone to control a TV. What is it to rise out your chair if you're watching that much TV and watching that many channels to get up and turn the TV off or turn the channel? We don't even do that anymore, you know? And that's one of those areas where do you make the balance? You know, something as simple as getting up and turning off a TV has turned into you sit in your chair and you just flip through channels. And it's also has turned into a kind of an analogy of the certain kind of father, a certain kind of man who just comes home after work, in most cases, or in some cases, don't even have a job and just plops on a chair and just press buttons all day. And it's an analogy. And one of the analogies that I never wanted to be, that my kids would see me work all day, or I've had some home-based businesses, and when they saw me plop on my chair or sit at a chair, that I'd be flipping through channels. At all times, they would see me in movement. At all times, they would see me at a computer or a laptop, me creating. At all times, they would see me. They saw me working on a hot rod. They saw me take an engine out of a car and put another engine in a car. They saw me up under a car welding. They saw me in the backyard building a backyard park. My kids got a chance to see me walk across a stage when I got my MBA. And so they've always seen my body in movement. They've always seen my mind in movement. And that's powerful. And it's sad that enough of us and enough children have not seen men with their body and their minds in movement. I'm gonna say that again. It's sad that enough young children, girls and boys, have not seen grown men with their minds and their bodies in movement, and I'll say in a positive movement. And what that means is just seeing a man being the best he can be, mentally, holistically, physically, spiritually, just seeing him being the best he can be, and getting a chance for children to see something different than what has been put out in the diaspora. I say that because yesterday I had one of my longest friendship. As a matter of fact, I consider him my brother, Marcus. He was here visiting. I actually had a family reunion in Savannah, and I've known this brother since I was 7 years old. And weird dynamics. His father is my uncle's. My uncle's father, stepfather. And so Mark's brother, Mark's stepbrother, married my aunt. And so we've been attached to the hip since we were 7 years old, riding bicycles, playing Little League baseball. Then he went to another high school playing football. I went to another high school playing football. And then when we got out of high school, I had got hurt because I was on my way to USC, and I got hurt, and so I had to figure out what I was going to do. I was in junior college, and Mess Ronnie got me a job working for the government right out of high school, and Mark was in satellite. He was studying satellites and electronics and stuff, and he got him a job doing that. Then he got him a job in the government, and we were in our 20s, and early 20s, as a matter of fact. We were late teens, early 20s, and we were both going to junior college, and he met a young lady named Sharon, and she was so happened she was from Atlanta, and he ended up asking her to get married. I was the best man. The wedding, oddly enough, was in Atlanta. So had always watched black college football today on ESPN back in the day, and knew about the HBCUs, but didn't know that much about them. But so we came here for the wedding. I was the best man, and we, during the time we was here, we just took a tour of Atlanta, and we happened to go by the AU Center, and I just picked up a college application just on a whim, and had the wedding. Mark's married. We all come back to San Diego, and I'm working, going to junior college, got my AA. Now it's time for me to transfer to an undergrad school And I had Columbia, Dillard, Morgan State, San Diego State, UCSD, some of the schools in San Diego, and literally got accepted to all of them, and had to decide what I was going to do. And I had literally accepted Morgan State because it was the farthest away. It was in Baltimore, and it was the farthest away. And then Dillard came in Louisiana. I said, oh, I'm going to head there. I already accepted to San Diego State, already accepted to the schools in California. It would have been a lot cheaper. I would have been able to stay at home. Had paid to accept Morgan State, was getting ready to buy the plane ticket. I took about a year furlough from my government job. Had a great boss, Tony Bonilla. He told me that, hey, Glenn, we can furlough your position. You can go down there, go to school. If it don't work out, I got a job back for you if it don't work out. And so for him, I respect him for that to this day. Then one of the other odd ways life works, Sharon, Mark, my best friend, Sharon being from Atlanta, her dad was a Morehouse man. As a matter of fact, Dr. Chandler was an English professor. His wife, Mrs. Floyd Chandler, was also a Spelman grad. So it's weird how the karma works out. So was on my way to Morgan State, and getting ready to buy plane tickets, getting everything set up, getting ready to shut everything down in San Diego, make this move for school. And at the last minute, my Morehouse College application was accepted. They accepted me, and that changed everything because I said, hey, you know what? I'm headed down here to Atlanta because I saw what the cost of living was at the time. I knew what the cost of living was in San Diego, what it was in California, what it was in Atlanta, what it was in Georgia. And I knew the apartment and condo that me and Mark had in California, I can come here, go to school, get a job, and have me a house and land. I knew this 20 years ago. And so I end up coming to Morehouse. Ironically, when I arrive to get set up for my dorm, and I stayed in Benjamin Mays Hall, which that's another thing of that's karmic and an irony. I stayed in Benjamin Mays Hall, and the dorm wasn't ready yet. So, you know, I had money, had credit cards, because I was a little older than most of the incoming freshmen, because I came in as a sophomore junior. And so I knew how to take care of myself in plan A, plan B. I had to rent a car. I had some money. I had credit cards. So I knew I could go stay at a hotel for a week or 2 weeks until the dorms were ready. Well, actually about a couple of days until the dorms were ready. And I said, okay, dorms are not ready. You know, let me go to plan B. Called Marcus and told him what was going on. And he said, hey, just you know, Mr. Chandler said, when you get there, let him know and just let him know what's going on. And so I called Mr. Chandler and I told him what was going on at Morehouse, and it almost brings tears to my eyes because Sharon's parents, Mr. Gene and Floyd Chandler, allowed me to stay at their house, fixed me meals. They allowed me to stay there until my dorm was ready, and then I went on to school. Mr. and Mrs. Chandler had only met me at Sharon's wedding because I was Mark's best man. That's all they knew of me. And I saw they knew Mark, and they know what kind of man was marrying their daughter. And me, Darren, and Chuck were the groomsmen, and I was Mark's best man. So they knew us from that. But that's all they knew. But Mr. Chandler, Dr. Chandler, allowed me to stay in his house, and Mrs. Chandler fed me breakfast. And rest in peace, Mrs. Chandler, to the end of time. I have so many people to be thankful for, but I'm definitely going to be thankful to the Chandlers, Sharon's family, for what they did, because they didn't have to do that. And that just shows you, one, how that was that Southern hospitality. Two, that was that Morehouse Spelman connection. And three, how your pattern, your character, and your movement of your mind, your movement of your body, and the way you move about this world is karmic, and how it can have an effect on you, how it can have an effect on others, and what it means over time. And so that's why I'm tying this all together, because the way you move physically, the way you move mentally, the way you move in your interactions with people tells other people about who you are and what you are. And you can't be lazy about that. You just cannot be lazy. And here it is, 20, almost 20 something years, from me coming here for Mark's wedding, end up going to Morehouse, end up meeting the Chandlers, which is Sharon's parents, Mark's in-laws. I end up coming here to go to school, end up meeting Hotep, meeting some of the guys I met at Morehouse, becoming a Morehouse man. Brother that helped me out so much, Hotep Akhenaten, Hustle University. Meeting him, meeting my wife, getting into the mortgage and banking industry, meeting Henry Constanza, who was one of the foremost Datsun guys here in Georgia. He had one of the first Datsuns 280Zs with a V8 swap. Meeting him, and I just literally came to this city, this state, and found a new world and found a new life of movement, mentally, physically, spiritually. And yesterday, me and Mark was here for his other side of family reunion, and we had a chance to sit there and have breakfast and just chop it up, and we just kind of reminisced and talked about these last 20 years of what our life has been. Both of us married over 20 years, both of us with two children, both of us with kids going to school or going to college or doing something. And then we have our buddy Vince, the same thing, married over 20 years, two kids, two sons, one in college, one in high school, getting ready to go to college. And we're talking three young African-American men from Southeast San Diego, one of the roughest areas of San Diego. I had my mom and dad. Mark had his parents. Vince didn't have his dad, but he had enough uncles and men around, plus my dad and other coaches, so that filled in. But he knew his dad. His dad lived in Fresno. We visited him one day. His dad at that time was just an ox. He was still at that time, I want to say, in his 40s, and was a tree on the tree cutting business, and he was still climbing trees, cutting them down. And we see where Vince get it from. And to have three African-American men from one of the hardest areas of the city, San Diego, rise from it is remarkable and magical. And what I tell folks is, yes, we're special, but we're special because of the circumstances. You know, circumstances spit out either negativity, evil, or special individuals. And we're not the only ones. We're not the only ones. There's several. I can speak on all the Heisman Trophy winners that have come from San Diego, from Ricky Williams to Reggie Bush to Rashawn Salaam, Marcus Allen. There's a couple of other guys that played football there. Robert Griffith, Eric Allen, James Primus, he's down here in Atlanta. He played for the Falcons. There were some basketball players, the baseball players, Kevin Mitchell, Sam Horn, you know. I mean, I can just go on and on and on. Gail Deaver, she's from San Diego. So Nick Cannon, I know Nick Cannon's dad. You know, I know his father. So it's remarkable what has come out of San Diego, but it's also disappointing of what could have been with different circumstances. But because of my experiences and my travels, I realized there's a Southeast San Diego in every part of the country. And that window of opportunity we had and those voices we had, we no longer have those voices. We no longer have those windows of opportunity. And not me, but I'm seeing this younger generation. We have more technology. We have more of a lot, but I see less opportunity, and I see more. I see that view, that light, that optimism. I don't see the optimism, and I fear for the next two generations. But that fear motivates me not to sit and soak and wait for shit to happen. That fear and that hunger, that fire says make some things happen. And that's where the movement of my mind comes. That's where the movement of my body. You know, I'm going to post something later on Facebook to let folks know. It's like, Glenn, why do you work out so much? You getting ready to turn 55 years old. Why do you read so much? Why do you grind? Why do you do the things you do? Why? I said, well, you know what? My why is I'm not trying to be young. I'm trying to be great. For 400 years, too many folks have been told they're no good, they're animals, and treated as such. And I'm changing that narrative. Elijah's changing that narrative. There's a million others changing that narrative. I ain't trying to be young. I'm trying to be great. And if you don't understand that, that's your personal problem. That is your personal problem. But you can't stop greatness. And if you get in the way, you're just going to make me even more great. You're just going to make us even more great. So it becomes you either with us or against us. But if you're against us, you're going to even make us more great. So my thought for the day is always have your mind and your body, your personality, your communication, your aura, your karma, always have it in positive movement. Always have it in positive movement, because karma is a bitch. It really, really is. It really, really is. There's some situations that have no explanation, because I'll drop this little tidbit. I will always, always have hoodies. I will always wear hoodies, because when that young man was shot and killed, murdered, Trayvon Martin was murdered by that punk ass, I had to watch my son every day get on a bus and he would be wearing hoodies. And I had to tell him to stop wearing his hoodies because I didn't want something to happen to him. And just as Trayvon Martin was more than likely just a good kid, my son is a good kid. And it's sad that a sweatshirt that could have a brand on it that can make you $1 million has become symbolic with the injustice in this country. So I wear hoodies. I wear hoodies. I might even put in my will, make sure I'm buried in a hoodie, because I know what kind of man I am. I know what kind of man my friends are. I know what kind of man Elijah, Sydney, Donnie, these brothers are. And the hoodie is not symbolic of criminality. The hoodie is symbolic of being grown, handling your business, and we're going to flip the script on that. So this is Glenn Andrews. Keep your mind, body, spirit in positive movement. We're not trying to be young. We had a good time when we were young. Right now, we're trying to be great. This is Glenn Andrews, Heroes and Kings, Elijah Brady, Heroes and Kings, signing out. Good morning. This is Glenn Andrews of Heroes and Kings, Elijah Brady of Heroes and Kings. Good Sunday morning. As usual, about to get ready to go get some cardio in, basically hit the treadmill, my Roar air bike, about to get it in. About 1 week away from going to visit my son for about 12 days. He's on the left coast in school. When I get back, return back to the right coast, we'll be sending my daughter off to college, and me and the wife will be empty nesters outside of our third child, which is Bernie Mac the Rottweiler. Interesting week, as always. Interesting weekend. I usually do this on Monday, but I thought I'd do it today, Sunday morning. I got a little bit of time on my hands right now, and I like to do my podcast with a clear mind and clear thought, and taking all the weekly experiences, discussions, conversations, and everything I've done over the week, and kind of just do an overview and do an overview of the week past, so I can get ready for the week that's about to take place. Because it's one of those things of kind of having a plan for what you want to do for the week, what you want to achieve, any objectives, any goals, any initiatives, what you want to do as far as training that week. If you're working towards a 90-day goal, or a 6-month goal, or you're in the middle of a year goal of taking on either a mental or physical health and wellness transformation. So you always got to look at where you have come from, look at where you are, and look at where you want to go. And it's constant. You know, you got to keep moving. I saw somebody said something or did something. Oh, Kaisha Fit, KAISIAFIT. Someone just posed the question, you know, do you work out every day? Or do you do something every day, or something along those lines? And she said, yes, I try to move every day. And I thought that was the greatest answer. It was just the perfect answer, because that's literally what the human body and the human mind needs. The human body needs to move every day. It needs to move past being average. It needs to move past the normal every day. And you need to challenge your body as well as you need to challenge your mind. You need to read. You need to do computations. You need to look at numbers. You need to look at words. And sometimes it may even be great to look at a different language and discern what that language is. You know, I have with these phones, there's so much technology and so much on a phone that you can do, that it's really sad that we don't have a higher IQ or a more intelligent population. However, having said that, there are language apps, language translators, and all kind of software, hardware, technology to make the human being better. And I say make the human being better because I think we're getting lazy. Matter of fact, I know we're getting lazy. And you have to balance out technology, machines, robotics with what a human being can do. From a business standpoint, I recognize robotics is efficient and you have more production. However, it takes human beings to create those robots and robotics to run a factory or run a manufacturing process. On the flip side, when it comes to having technology and things that make what we so-called, quote-unquote, make life easier, I dare say in some situations it makes the human being lazier. Perfect example is a remote control for a TV. Though the remote control makes it easier for you to just plop down in your lazy boy, grab the remote control and hit the TV, and then every time you need to change a channel, you just lift up your hand and push a button. And now you can do that on your phone as well. You can program your phone to control a TV. What is it to rise out your chair if you're watching that much TV and watching that many channels to get up and turn the TV off or turn the channel? We don't even do that anymore, you know? And that's one of those areas where do you make the balance? You know, something as simple as getting up and turning off a TV has turned into you sit in your chair and you just flip through channels. And it's also has turned into a kind of an analogy of the certain kind of father, a certain kind of man who just comes home after work. In most cases, or in some cases, don't even have a job and just plops on a chair and just press buttons all day. And it's an analogy. And one of the analogies I never, as they say, that I never wanted to be, that my kids would see me work all day, or I've had some home-based businesses, and when they saw me plop on my chair or sit at a chair, that I'd be flipping through channels. At all times, they would see me in movement. At all times, they would see me at a computer or a laptop, me creating. At all times, they would see me. They saw me working on a hot rod. They saw me take an engine out of a car and put another engine in a car. They saw me up under a car welding. They saw me in the backyard building a backyard park. My kids got a chance to see me walk across a stage when I got my MBA. And so they've always seen my body in movement. They've always seen my mind in movement. And that's powerful. And it's sad that enough of us and enough children have not seen men with their body and their minds in movement. I'm gonna say that again. It's sad that enough young children, girls and boys, have not seen grown men with their minds and their bodies in movement. And I'll say in a positive movement. And what that means is just seeing a man being the best he can be. Mentally, holistically, physically, spiritually, just seeing him being the best it can be and getting a chance for children to see something different than what has been put out in the diaspora. I say that because yesterday I had one of my longest friendship. As a matter of fact, I consider him my brother, Marcus. He was here visiting. Actually, he had a family reunion in Savannah. And I've known this brother since I was 7 years old. And a weird dynamics, his father is my uncle's father, stepfather. And so Mark's brother, Mark's stepbrother, married my aunt. And so we've been attached to the hip since we were 7 years old, riding bicycles, playing little league baseball. Then he went to another high school playing football. I went to another high school playing football. And then when we got out of high school, I had got hurt because I was on my way to USC and I got hurt. And so I had to figure out what I was going to do. I was in junior college and Mess Ronnie got me a job working for the government right out of high school. And Mark was in satellite. He was studying satellites and electronics and stuff, and he got him a job doing that. Then he got him a job in the government, and we were in our 20s, and early 20s, as a matter of fact. We were late teens, early 20s, and we were both going to junior college, and he met a young lady named Sharon, and she was from Atlanta, and he ended up asking her to get married. I was the best man. The wedding, oddly enough, was in Atlanta. So, had always watched black college football today on ESPN back in the day and knew about the HBCUs, but didn't know that much about them. But so we came here for the wedding. I was the best man. And during the time we was here, we just took a tour of Atlanta and we happened to go by the AU Center. And I just picked up a college application just on a whim. And had the wedding. Mark's married. We all come back to San Diego. And I'm working, going to junior college, got my AA. Now it's time for me to transfer to an undergrad school. And I had Columbia, Dillard, Morgan State, San Diego State, UCSD, some of the schools in San Diego, and literally got accepted to all of them, and had to decide what I was going to do. And I had literally accepted Morgan State because it was the farthest away. It was in Baltimore, and it was the farthest away. And then Dillard came in Louisiana. I said, oh, I'm going to head there. I already accepted San Diego State, already accepted to the schools in California. It would have been a lot cheaper. I would have been able to stay at home. Had paid to accept Morgan State, was getting ready to buy the plane ticket. I took about a year furlough from my government job. Had a great boss, Tony Bonilla. He told me that, hey, Glenn, we can furlough your position. You can go down there, go to school. If it don't work out, I got a job back for you if it don't work out. And so for him, I respect him for that to this day. Then one of the other odd ways life works, Sharon, Mark, my best friend, Sharon being from Atlanta, her dad was a Morehouse man. As a matter of fact, Dr. Chandler was an English professor. His wife, Mrs. Floyd Chandler, was also a Spelman grad. So it's weird how the karma works out. So I was on my way to Morgan State and getting ready to buy plane tickets, getting everything set up, getting ready to shut everything down in San Diego, make this move for school. And at the last minute, my Morehouse College application was accepted. They accepted me, and that changed everything because I said, you know what? I'm headed down here to Atlanta because I saw what the cost of living was at the time. I knew what the cost of living was in San Diego, what it was in California, what it was in Atlanta, what it was in Georgia. And I knew the apartment and condo that me and Mark had in California, I can come here, go to school, get a job, and have me a house and land. I knew this 20 years ago. And so I end up coming to Morehouse. Ironically, when I arrive to get set up for my dorm, and I stayed in Benjamin Mays Hall, which that's another thing of that's karmic and an irony. I stayed in Benjamin Mays Hall, and the dorm wasn't ready yet. So, you know, I had money, had credit cards, because I was a little older than most of the incoming freshmen, because I came in as a sophomore junior. And so I knew how to take care of myself in plan A, plan B. I had to rent a car. I had some money. I had credit cards. So I knew I could go stay at a hotel for a week or 2 weeks until the dorms were ready. Well, actually about a couple of days until the dorms were ready. And I said, okay, dorms are not ready. You know, let me go to plan B. Called Marcus and told him what was going on. And he said, hey, just you know, Mr. Chandler said, when you get there, let him know and just let him know what's going on. And so I called Mr. Chandler and I told him what was going on at Morehouse. And it almost brings tears to my eyes because Sharon's parents, Mr. Gene and Floyd Chandler, allowed me to stay at their house, fixed me meals. They allowed me to stay there until my dorm was ready. And then I went on to school. Mr. and Mrs. Chandler had only met me at Sharon's wedding because I was Mark's best man. That's all they knew of me. And I saw the and they knew Mark, and they know what kind of man was marrying their daughter. And me, Darren, and Chuck were the groomsmen, and I was Mark's best man. So they knew us from that. But that's all they knew. But Mr. Chandler, Dr. Chandler, allowed me to stay in his house, and Mrs. Chandler fed me breakfast. And rest in peace, Mrs. Chandler, to the end of time. I have so many people to be thankful for, but I'm definitely going to be thankful to the Chandler, Sharon's family for what they did, because they didn't have to do that. And that just shows you, one, how that was that Southern hospitality. Two, that was that Morehouse Spelman connection. And three, how your pattern, your character, and your movement, your movement of your mind, your movement of your body, and the way you move about this world is karmic, and how it can have an effect on you, how it can have an effect on others, and what it means over time. And so that's why I'm tying this all together, because the way you move physically, the way you move mentally, the way you move in your interactions with people tells other people about who you are and what you are. And you can't be lazy about that. You just cannot be lazy. And here it is, 20, almost 20 something years, from me coming here for Mark's wedding, end up going to Morehouse, end up meeting the Chandlers, which is Sharon's parents, Mark's in-laws. I end up coming here to go to school, end up meeting Hotep, meeting some of the guys I met at Morehouse, becoming a Morehouse man. Brother that helped me out so much, Hotep Akhenaten, Hustle University. Meeting him, meeting my wife, getting into the mortgage and banking industry, meeting Henry Constanza, who was one of the foremost Datsun guys here in Georgia. He had one of the first Datsuns 280Zs with a V8 swap. Meeting him, and I just literally came to this city, this state, and found a new world and found a new life of movement, mentally, physically, spiritually. And yesterday, me and Mark was here for his other side of family reunion, and we had a chance to sit there and have breakfast and just chop it up, and we just kind of reminisced and talked about these last 20 years of what our life has been. Both of us married over 20 years, both of us with two children, both of us with kids going to school or going to college or doing something. And then we have our buddy Vince, the same thing. Married over 20 years, two kids, two sons, one in college, one in high school, getting ready to go to college. And we're talking three young African-American men from Southeast San Diego, one of the roughest areas of San Diego. I had my mom and dad. Mark had his parents. Vince didn't have his dad, but he had enough uncles and men around, plus my dad and other coaches, so that filled in. But he knew his dad. His dad lived in Fresno. We visited him one day. His dad at that time was just an ox. He was still at that time, I want to say, in his 40s, and was on a tree cutting business, and he was still climbing trees, cutting them down. And we see where Vince get it from. And to have three African-American men from one of the hardest areas of the city, San Diego, rise from it is remarkable and magical. And what I tell folks is, yes, we're special, but we're special because of the circumstances. You know, circumstances spit out either negativity, evil, or special individuals. And we're not the only ones. We're not the only ones. There's several. I can speak on all the Heisman Trophy winners that have come from San Diego, from Ricky Williams to Reggie Bush to Rashawn Salaam, Marcus Allen. There's a couple of other guys that played football there. Robert Griffith, Eric Allen, James Primus. He's down here in Atlanta. He played for the Falcons. There were some basketball players, the baseball players, Kevin Mitchell, Sam Horn, you know. I mean, I can just go on and on and on. Gail Devers, she's from San Diego. So Nick Cannon, I know Nick Cannon's dad. You know, I know his father. So it's remarkable what has come out of San Diego, but it's also disappointing of what could have been with different circumstances. But because of my experiences and my travels, I realized there's a Southeast San Diego in every part of the country. And that window of opportunity we had and those voices we had, we no longer have those voices. We no longer have those windows of opportunity. And not me, but I'm seeing this younger generation. We have more technology. We have more of a lot, but I see less opportunity, and I see more. I see the view, that light, that optimism. I don't see the optimism, and I fear for the next two generations. But that fear motivates me not to sit and soak and wait for shit to happen. That fear and that hunger, that fire says make some things happen. And that's where the movement of my mind comes. That's where the movement of my body. You know, I'm going to post something later on Facebook to let folks know. It's like, Glenn, why do you work out so much? You getting ready to turn 55 years old. Why do you read so much? Why do you grind? Why do you do the things you do? Why? I said, well, you know what? My why is I'm not trying to be young. I'm trying to be great. For 400 years, too many folks have been told they're no good. They're animals and treated as such. And I'm changing that narrative. Elijah's changing that narrative. There's a million others changing that narrative. I ain't trying to be young. I'm trying to be great. And if you don't understand that, that's your personal problem. That is your personal problem. But you can't stop greatness. And if you get in the way, you're just going to make me even more great. You're just going to make us even more great. So it becomes you either with us or against us. But if you're against us, you're going to even make us more great. So my thought for the day is always have your mind and your body, your personality, your communication, your aura, your karma, always have it in positive movement. Always have it in positive movement, because karma is a bitch. It really, really is. It really, really is. There's some situations that have no explanation, because I'll drop this little tidbit. I will always, always have hoodies. I will always wear hoodies, because when that young man was shot and killed, murdered, Trayvon Martin was murdered by that punk ass, I had to watch my son every day get on a bus and he would be wearing hoodies. And I had to tell him to stop wearing his hoodies because I didn't want something to happen to him. And just as Trayvon Martin was more than likely just a good kid, my son is a good kid. And it's sad that a sweatshirt that could have a brand on it that can make you $1 million has become symbolic with the injustice in this country. So I wear hoodies. I might even put in my will, make sure I'm buried in a hoodie, because I know what kind of man I am. I know what kind of man my friends are. I know what kind of man Elijah, Sydney, Donnie, these brothers are. And the hoodie is not symbolic of criminality. The hoodie is symbolic of being grown, handling your business, and we're going to flip the script. We're going to flip the script on that. So this is Glenn Andrews. Keep your mind, body, spirit in positive movement. We're not trying to be young. We had a good time when we were young. Right now, we're trying to be great. This is Glenn Andrews, Heroes and Kings. Elijah Brady, Heroes and Kings, signing out.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.